A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Glenn McNeil is Australia's most successful, or certainly Australia's most decorated co-driver, with over 100 WRC events to your name. Glenn, welcome to the Dust Trails Podcast.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Looking back on your career, it must seem it's been going on forever. I mean, it's over 100 WRC events and I think nearly 300 events all up.
I don't know. I know it's more than 100 WRCs, but I haven't ever... People always ask, how many rallies you've done? It's like, oh, I don't know, a lot. Just means I'm now old, I think.
Yes. So you've never kept a record over the years of what you've done?
No. I mean, I'm very grateful for websites like EWRC. I think that's amazing. You know, to look back at the history, sometimes people, you know, you sit around, people are talking about different things that have happened and you're like, oh, what year was that? So, and the EWRC is pretty cool. You can go back, obviously, in there and check out what happened and see if your memory actually matches what really happened.
Yeah. So where did your journey begin? I mean, obviously, you were probably born into a rallying family with your dad, Peter, being involved as a competitor and as an administrator for most of his life.
Look, it started, you know, it was always around the sport right from an early age. Never pushed into it by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't know. I think I always loved it. I loved the going out and, you know, watching dad compete and stuff like that. So, you know, it was always going to be a natural progression. And a friend of mine, Lee Hines, started driving, and I was probably being very lucky in that I've always been with or had the opportunity to go with very good drivers. So I started with Lee, who was obviously very quick, and things sort of quickly progressed, and I quickly decided that this is actually pretty cool. I want to actually do this. I want to actually, you know, try and do this as a job, which it's not a real job, but it was a passion for, I don't know, 25 years.
Yeah, and I guess certainly when you started with Lee Hines, the first big thing for you was the Daihatsu Challenge in 1992, which was probably certainly Australia's first and perhaps the cheapest one-make series that they've had in the Australian Championship.
The cars weren't exactly inspiring, but it was inspiring to compete events, you know, 30 other people in the same car and try and drive them absolutely flat out. There were some great people in that, and, you know, it gave us an opportunity to go and compete, you know, around Australia, which probably at that point in time, you know, prior to that, we've been rallying at Datsun 1200. So it was a bit of a step up, probably didn't go any faster, but it was a bit of a step up into a more modern car, and the opportunities that came from that, you know, were amazing. We got to go to New Zealand and compete in the WRC there, and it was just, yeah, it sort of set you on a path, and I think it was an amazing one-make series. Like you say, very cheap.
Yeah, so you guys won it in the first year in 1992, and as you say, you got that prize drive, which was in the Charade GTTI, which was the turbocharged version of the car. Going to New Zealand for the first time must have been a big eye-opening experience for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, back then, you know, recce was unlimited. You know, there wasn't central servicing. So the rally literally went across the North Island as far as Gisborne on the East Coast, and trying to remember where we went in the north, but yeah, like, you know, to Rotorua and some of the famous stages, and it was an adventure, that was for sure. It didn't particularly end well, but it was certainly an adventure.
Doing something like the Motu Road stage in the Charade must have been fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd actually have to admit, Motu is one of those stages for me. Like, it's an amazing challenge, but it's like, I've done it a few times and I always reckon you get about 10K in, you're like, must be going to be over soon, because it's not exactly, you know, low average speed. It's not exactly my favourite stage.
Yeah. And obviously part of Lee's prize was that drive, but he also got the chance to test drive a Carlos Sainz Lancia Delta not long after as well. Were you involved in that?
Yeah, we were very lucky. You know, Gary Connolly helped organise that. And we got the opportunity to, like you say, to test the it was the test car and to drive that before the rally. So Lee actually got to grips with it really quickly, and the team were actually pretty impressed. So it was a great experience, and it was a great great opportunity to go, right, this is, you know, I don't know, it left you wanting more, if that makes sense. And, yeah, like, there was some talk in the background at the time, like, you know, people get excited about some few things, and there was some money trying to be raised at a see if Lee could get an opportunity in that car for some events, but that never quite came to fruition.
Yeah. Moving on, your first ride with probably a name driver was in 1996 when you sat beside Greg Carr in the factory Hyundai Accent. I mean, that must have been something to write home about. I mean, like me, Greg Carr was probably a hero of yours growing up.
Oh, absolutely, he was. He was, you know, he was the one. He was actually the one that, you know, was my hero. So yeah. It was photos of me when I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old, you know, standing by his car at the Southern Cross. My mum and dad had gone across over there to spectate. And, you know, the opportunity as somebody young in the sport to actually go with him was, you know, was amazing, and was Wayne Bell's wife, Ricky. You know, I was actually working for Motorsport Australia, or CAMS as it was back then. She walked into the office and was like, "Oh, we're looking for co-drivers." And it's like, "Really? What do I need to do?" So, yeah, amazing opportunity. And he, you know, we didn't have the best year. We had, it was a new car and there was a few teething problems and stuff like that. But certainly going with Greg, you know, he's just such a, he was so helpful and also like encouraging as well. So, you know, just to say, look, you're on the right track, you're doing a great job. So it was, yeah, it was a awesome thing to have happen at that time in my career. And it's, you know, just to have the help from people like him. It's one thing I think, you know, youngsters in the sport could probably make more of, is literally asking the more experienced people, you know, for help. So it's one thing I don't think we do that well.
Yeah. Are there a couple of things that he imparted on you from his knowledge bank that you sort of look back and say, "Hey, gee, I'm glad I learned that at such an early age"?
Yeah. Like, I think, you know, there was probably some things with him, but there was also opportunities. Like, you know, as I said, the car, we didn't have the best of results, but literally, you know, we retired in Malaysia early on, and then he was introducing, you know, to me to Dave Richards, because at the time Pro Driver obviously running in the championship, and they needed a little bit of help with something. And he's like, "Oh, Glenn can do it. Glenn can go and do that." So, you know, just opportunities to meet the right people. And, you know, he was more in, it probably didn't change anything that I did. He was just more encouraging that, you know, "Hey, you're on the right track. And just keep doing what you're doing. Just keep doing it." Like, there was probably lots of little things.
Yeah.
It's never one thing. It's probably lots of little things that he definitely helped with.
Was there much of a difference that you noticed initially in his ability or the way he attacks stages from what you've been doing with Lee Hines?
I think Greg was just probably, and it's probably an unfair comparison. There's somebody at the end of their career who's really maturing. You know, whereas the speed-wise, I mean, Lee had awesome speed. It was just, you know, probably that maturity, just the way he dealt with things, the way he did things was just a more mature approach. So he was very level-headed. He was very intense, which was, hey, you're there to do a job. You're there to try and do the best job you possibly can. So, and I think probably his intensity was probably taken the wrong way by, you know, by people, like by outside people. But yeah, as far as I'm concerned, he was amazing. He's an amazing person. It was just an awesome experience.
Yeah. The following year in 1997, you actually got the chance to compete with your first international drivers, Greg Graham from New Zealand and also Monster Tajima from Japan, two guys who were blindingly fast, but also probably on the ragged edge as well.
You know, Greg, I mean, the opportunity with Greg was great. You know, it was the first time obviously being in a proper sort of factory back team, which was amazing. That was really, really cool. It was a big, you know, big step up. Greg was certainly, he was on the, there was only one way and that was flat out. So, great guy. Still in contact with him today. And, it was great memories. And same with Tajima. I think, you know, Tajima also taught me a lot just dealing with the different nationalities and stuff like that. So, it was both of them were great steps in my career, I suppose.
And with Tajima, you were driving or competing in that Suzuki Baleno station wagon, so that must have been a bit of a funny one as well.
The most unlikely rally car. So it was exceptionally well built and had a great engine. just a very long chassis. So
yeah, he was a real cult hero in Australia when he competed out here, wasn't he?
Yeah, oh, absolutely he was. You know, he's just a, you know, you imagine Japanese people, I'm not being horrible, but it's like, you know, sort of small and petite, and he's this big, gigantic guy, just, you know, he's, and his massive smile, and he was just a really good guy.
And he was such a nice fellow, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Was it around this time that you were actually working for the Rally of Canberra as well in an administration role?
Yeah, I'm trying to think when that actually happened. I think that was 97 that actually happened. So that was, once again, it was Motorsport Australia, and then Mike Bell was running Rally of Canberra and asked if I'd be interested to come down and be a part of that, which, you know, once again, it was a great step, because the Canberra government owned the event, and basically the deal was, hey, you know, you organise the rally, and I suppose, you know, I really want to go away and compete a lot. And they were like, that's fine. You do your job. You do your job. You'll get paid. Don't worry about the holidays. As long as you're doing the job. And they treated it as, I suppose, as if I was going away to events and I was learning new things, promoting the event. So it was a great, you know, it was a great way to combine the two, I think.
Was it the professional co-driving gig that eventually caused this job to end?
Yeah, like I got the opportunity to do in 2001.
Yeah,
I got the opportunity to go and compete with Toshi Arai in Subaru World Rally Team. So that was a little bit out of the blue. Toshi and Roger Freeman have been teammates in 1998 at. In that, like, we did like a program with Subaru Japan, and we did a bunch of different events. Did we do three events, including China, Australia, and New Zealand? Something happened with Roger. He'd been a little bit of a naughty boy, so he wasn't allowed to go and compete the following year.
Yeah.
So he gave me, he was the one that pushed me to get the opportunity. So, you know, once again, it was working, you know, with him. In that year, and I suppose he could see that I was pretty intent on doing what I was doing, and he enjoyed, you know, giving me the helping hand up into pro drive, which I'm sure I'd never ever been considered for if he hadn't pushed for it so much.
Yeah, that must have been a huge undertaking for you as a co-driver, jumping into a world rally car for the first time, having come out of things like Suzuki Baleno wagons.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Like, it was, you know, it's completely and utterly different, you know, even just the whole team environment and the testing and everything. You know, 1 minute you're on a, you arrive in the UK, and the next day you're on a plane to France going testing, and then you're going somewhere else to go testing or a rally or whatever. And I mean, I remember early in my career, with them, it was we're in Kenya, and it was like we'd arrived the day before in the hotel, and it was back to the airport to hop in a helicopter to go out testing. And it's like, this is nuts. Like, this is like, you know, it's got to pinch yourself that you actually have this opportunity to do that. It was, yeah, it was amazing.
Interestingly, as we're speaking today, the Acropolis Rally is on this weekend, and I noticed a picture on Facebook yesterday of you and Toshi with flames coming out the back of the car, and the car on fire. I mean, that, what do you have from memories of that?
Well, that was a time when there was, you know, it was all the hydraulics were underneath the car, and the prop shaft on the Subaru would actually would break. And when the prop shaft broke, then it would had the potential to cut the hydraulic lines. And the deal was, Petter had burnt out a car in Cyprus like a few weeks earlier. It sounds going to sound a bit nuts, but basically we had this meeting before the rally, and the deal was, it's like, if you broke a prop shaft, you stop. Like, there's no continuing driving. So, you know, on the rally, sure enough, we break a prop shaft, and, you know, you can hear it banging on the floor, and it's like, Toshi, we need to stop. And it was like, there was no communication coming back. It was like, right. And then he was like, once the flames started, he was like, right, now we have to stop. And this is probably going to sound stupid, but it was like, right, if we stop, this thing burns to the ground. It's like, we've already done the wrong thing. And I don't know, I knew that it was less than 2K, but I knew that in 2 kilometres there was a, you know, the midpoint of the stage where there'd be a fire engine, and it was like, right, we just need to keep going to that point to actually get this thing put out, which probably, yeah, you know, maybe it's being young and dumb, I don't know. But we got to the midpoint, and sure enough, there was fire engine there, and they put it up. So yeah, it was very lucky. It didn't do too much damage, luckily.
Mm. And was that only a 1 year deal with Toshi for that 2001 season?
Yeah, yeah. Like, it was a bit with Toshi. It was interesting. It was we did, I'm trying to think how many rallies we did. I think
there was nine that year in the WRC.
Yeah. So Toshi, yeah, like, I'm still great friends with him today. I went back and co-drove for him later in my career. But at that point, I think, you know, very early on, he was very much of sort of an old culture in terms of, you're younger than me, you sit there, you say nothing, you just do your job. It's like, oh, okay. Mm. I'm probably too opinionated to sit there and do that. So it was out of the car, it was great. In the car, it was like he was doing his job and I was doing my job, and it was like, I don't know. For any great relationship or anything that's successful in the sport, you know, you see the way that two people work together. I mean, you look at, you know, Neil and Coral, the way they've worked together is amazing. Yeah. The way that Loeb and Daniel Eleanor work together is amazing. It's like, you know, all the great partnerships. And it wasn't a partnership. It was very much two separate people. And it was, yeah, he didn't respect me enough, probably because I was young and I hadn't had the experiences he'd had. Like, he'd driven the World Rally Car the previous year, and kind of like, well, what's, you know, why do you have an opinion when, you know, I've been there and done it? So, it didn't keep going after that year. He didn't keep driving the World Rally Car after that year. He did the Group N thing. But interestingly enough, when Tony Serkin went with him and when he decided to stop, Toshi rang me up and said, right, will you come and do some more rallies with me? And it's like, I'll come and do one rally with you. And remember, we went and did an Asia Pacific rally in Malaysia. And when we were there, he was like, oh, what do you think about this? And it's like, really? My opinion now matters? Really? Like, I don't know. I think, you know, I was a bit older. He was probably a bit more mature. I think he also had a lot of pressure put on him in 2001 from Subaru to perform.
And yes,
it was, I think he felt a lot more pressure than he probably would ever led on to, you know. And yeah, I think it was a missed opportunity because he, you know, he is a very, very talented individual, and he, you know, slow speed stuff, he was really quick. He was very fast in places like Cyprus. And Greece and places like that, but in the fast, are just lacking a bit of confidence. So,
I suppose during this period for yourself, you were co-driving for Dean Herridge between 1998 and 2004, and probably like the deal with Lee Hines, you were good mates, and it was just great fun to be involved in competing together.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that's, you know, that's the thing, is you spend so much time together. Yeah, and it was, yeah, especially with Dino. Like, you know, Dino today is still one of my best mates, and it was great fun. It was really good fun competing together. It was never, just because you're spending so much time together, there's never a chore to actually go and do that. It was I know there's also a level of trust there and respect. And I think they're the sort of two big things that make any relationship great.
Yeah, and your career with him started in the Hyundai FX Coupe, which was an interesting car, doing the Formula 2 Championship. I suppose competing with Dino, given that you're both based in Perth, made it a little bit easier as well.
Yeah, well, it's funny. When I started doing the stuff with the Hyundai, I was based in Canberra. He was here in Perth.
Yeah.
And then we went off and did some weird things. They shipped the car to the UK, and we did some British Championship events and things like that. So yeah, I think I was based in New Zealand when we were doing the Australian Championship and stuff like that. So, yeah.
The partnership with Dean, obviously that was totally different to what you'd experienced with Toshi, as far as giving feedback in the car and sort of bouncing ideas off each other.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think we were both on a, you know, similar age and similar level, and so, yeah, and mates. So that's where that came from. Look, when I went back the second time with Toshi, it was completely utterly different. We did probably two seasons of PWRC together, plus some Asia Pacific Championship events, which was great. And then, you know, that led him to actually ask me to sit and try and actually help his son. So
yeah,
when he first started rallying. So yeah, the relationship had changed over those years. I suppose we'd probably both grown up.
Yeah. The stuff with Dean Herridge, obviously, that eventually led into the Subaru Rally Team Australia deal where you were driving for the factory team. That must have been an important part of your career as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a very enjoyable part of the career, and it was very successful, obviously, with so many manufacturers' championships and you know, Possum winning championships and Cody winning championships. And we had some really good results. Always ribbed Dean that he basically made his career on coming second, but no, I mean, you know, Dean did some. We had some great events, and you know, one Group N at Rally New Zealand, one rally at Canberra. What else? And you know, Rally Australia are always very, very close to front running pace.
Yeah, you're also involved there during the Possum Born era when Possum tragically passed away. I mean, that must have been a difficult part for you and for everybody involved with the team.
Yeah, it was really difficult. It was a really difficult situation, but I think Subaru handled it, you know, exceptionally well. They brought some people in. They brought in Jeff Bond, who, you know, he's an amazing man, sports psychologist previously from the AIS, and he sort of came on board and helped us a lot that year. And yeah, he's just can't speak highly enough of, you know, his input. That really helped sort of, I don't know, just keep everybody focused on what the job was and you know, the best way to respect Possum and what Possum had built.
Yeah, and the deal with Dean ended basically late in 2004 when you switched to drive with Chris Atkinson at Rally Australia. That must have been a tough conversation, basically splitting up with your best mate.
Yeah, that's probably if you said what's the hardest moment in the sport ever, that'd be it. So. Yeah, I did. It was out of the blue, the opportunity. Something I initially said no to. But it was like then I was advised about what it actually meant and where it was actually going and why it had to happen now.
So what did you know about the deal for 2005 when you decided to go with Chris?
Knew that there was possibility of some rounds in the World Rally Car. I knew that essentially it was going to be a PWRC program the following year, but at that point in time there was no it wasn't what happened was on the table, like in terms of being obviously the second driver in the World Rally Team. That wasn't on the table. There was a potential to do a few events but not to do that many. So I think it was the result at Rally Australia and the speed was showed that really got everybody excited and made that happen.
I was going to say, yeah, because at Rally Australia, your first event together, you finished fifth outright and won Group N, which was an incredible effort. And clearly that pace went on and impressed Subaru.
Yeah, look, they were watching prior to the rally. We were told that they would be keeping an eye on what was going on. And I think, you know, that rally, the result probably doesn't show. There were so many things that happened, you know, in the rally sort of. Chris drove, you know, exceptionally well and was so much faster than anybody else. It's particularly on some, you know, very difficult stages that he'd never done before. So, he impressed a lot of people, including me.
Had you had much of an involvement with Chris before then?
We'd literally, not many people know, we literally did one rally prior to Rally Australia, which ended really badly. We'd done an event in the Suzuki in Asia Pacific Championship in China. Yep. Chris had spent the night in hospital the day before the rally started with food poisoning and was really unwell. And we started the rally and I think we tipped it on its side about, I don't know, in the first stage somewhere. It wasn't a great start. We probably shouldn't have been driving, to be fair. So that was our sum total of our experience together, was doing that. We think we restarted or something went wrong with the car. So we literally hadn't done a stage together properly before we started Rally Australia. And then, yeah, Rally Australia, all sorts of things happened. You know, the computer in the car wasn't playing ball on the first day and reducing the boost and things like that. And then the gear stick actually broke on the second day. So the boys and his team did an amazing job of making a, with a remote service, of making a gear stick out of a spanner. So that's how we changed gears for most of the second day. And then lost the clutch and all sorts of things happened. And, you know, literally bump starting the car off the start line of a stage on Sunday and still managed to win and set amazing times.
Incredible, yeah. So when the news comes through that suddenly you guys are the second drivers in the Subaru World Rally Team, what does that do for a guy's confidence? And do you remember the moment when it happened?
I was in Canberra, and it was like I knew that there was the potential that, like I said, that we'd go and do some stuff, but it was, yeah, to actually have that announced, it was like, right, okay, this changes things. So, look, and for me, it was exciting to go back to the team and actually to do it. I don't know, to a bit of redemption and a bit of like you knew what you were getting into.
Yeah.
And, you know, whilst we were obviously the second car and stuff like that, when I was there with Toshi, we were literally the fourth car. Mm-hmm. We had it was a very different environment. So it was really good to go back.
And what does life as suddenly a full-time co-driver mean for you? I mean, where do you live? What do your days consist of? How do you prepare for rallies?
It was really good. We went to and lived in the UK. So literally lived in a village, you know, not far from the team. And the idea was to immerse yourself in the team and do various jobs. Like I used to just to learn as much as you can, especially about the events that we were going to and the way the team worked and stuff like that. So I was given the job of, like, you know, coordinating all the recce schedules and planning to do stuff to do with the recces just to help out and to and also, you know, I was going to do the job anyway. So they're like, right, you can do it with the whole team. It's like, okay, cool. So so that days like that, you know, lots of training and stuff like that, and just planning for each event. It's what you dream of, you know, just to focus on going rallying, and that is it.
Of course, yeah. And as a co-driver, are you being paid by the team? Are you being paid by Chris? Or, I mean, how does that work?
To start with, that first year, like, I mean, literally there was some money contributed by, you know, Chris's investors to actually get him across the line and to get him opportunity to drive the car. So the first year was, you know, was the team were paying me some money for doing the jobs that I was doing. And then Chris was just, you know, we had an allowance from the investors as well. So this, once we move into the second year, the change to the team, obviously, or Chris getting a contract and then him paying me.
Yeah. In that first year in 2005, you did 12 events before you got onto the podium in Japan. Was there a difficult settling in period for you both to get used to the team and to get used to the car?
I mean, it was probably just, you know, the very first split we ever did, we actually won in Sweden. So if we didn't win, we were like literally bugger all behind low and clearly too fast because we went off not far after the first split point. But anyway, but it was, I suppose it was more, the team were really good. I think Chris's speed, like he showed enough speed that it rattled a few. You know, it rattled our teammates, and I remember them coming and telling us, like, you're the second driver. It's like, yeah, look. And Chris's comments were, you know, about some things were probably taken the wrong way by people, and it wasn't, I don't know, I think we fitted in pretty quickly. You know, our boys working on the car were awesome and were committed, and it didn't matter to them that we were the second car. It was, you know, and the fact that we probably won the Super Rally World Championship that year. Retiring from lots of rallies probably because of, you know, dumb mistakes and stuff, but that was all part of the learning. So but we also, you know, showed enough speed, and, you know, when things were right, and I think when you felt more confident, you know, especially, you know, Rally Australia and Rally Japan, what was the difference? It wasn't that we knew the stages, it just you felt more at home and more confident. I think that plays a mindset plays a much bigger part in the sport than we, or any sport, than we give it credit for.
Yeah, because 15 stage wins in that first season, so clearly that Chris had the pace. When you did get the podium in Japan, It must have been an incredible feeling standing on the podium with Marcus Gronholm and Sebastian Loeb.
Yeah, look, that's, you know, it's amazing to achieve that, and to achieve that in the first year. I remember, you know, that, and also remember, you know, winning our first stages in Rally New Zealand. I mean, that was, they were highlights. I think we also led Rally Australia that year. It's like, it's about, you know, you then sort of start to go, right, you know, you sort of believe that you kind of belong a bit more. And yeah, it just adds to your confidence.
Yeah. You mentioned the great result at Rally Australia. You ended up fourth, but I mean, that could easily have been a win and maybe one that got away.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, look, it was that year, you know, I think, you know, Loeb crashed, which is unlikely. you know, in most events, you know, things happened in a certain way. We obviously led the rally early on, and then had a gearbox problem, which was unusual. But you know, and then fought our way back, and I think we ended up losing by 10 or 11 seconds to the podium or something like that. But yeah, like it, absolutely. If you take away the time we obviously lost with the gearbox, then we should have won. But one of those things, I suppose. It was still, you know, it's pretty cool to be actually on the pace at that event. And, you know, people were like, oh, well, Chris knows rally so well. Really? It was the second time he'd ever done the event. So
Yeah, that's right. The second year, 2006, I think he had 7 stage win for the year. Rally Australia was another missed opportunity where you guys led the event. Was it a step backwards in terms of maybe not the performance of you guys, but of the performance of the car in 2006?
Yeah, like I think, you know, they struggled a lot with that car, understanding a few key things. There were some fundamental issues that with it, that's for sure. We did a lot of tests trying to understand what was actually wrong with it in terms of the suspension, the way it actually worked, and what, you know, why the guys were lacking confidence with it. We did some very bizarre, we did like a week's worth of testing in Sardinia at one point. We had Patsy Hagstrom drive the car for I think 4 or 5 days, and Chris drove the car for one day, and then Petter drove the car for one day, and I was in the car pretty much for the whole week, trying all sorts of weird, wonderful things to try and understand it. I don't think, never really got to the bottom of exactly why certain things happened with it. So, it was definitely a step backwards, absolutely.
Mm. So I guess in 2007, the car was still an issue. I mean, you did 5 events with Chris for that year until you had a big crash in Portugal, after which you, I guess, lost your job to Stéphane Prevot. Tell us the circumstances about you losing your job with Chris, because, I mean, clearly, from the outside, it didn't appear as though there was issues with the two of you.
No, it was more, it was my decision. It was more that, you know, I suppose that we're missing something, and I think we're, you know, still, you know, good mates, and there's nothing negative there. It was just, it was something missing, and it wasn't the first time because the accident was more just, you know, a mistake. Instead of turning right, when he actually, something out of the corner of his eye made him turn left, and it was like the note was, you know, it was a blind corner and it should have been right, but, you know, turn left and these things happen. But it wasn't the first time it had happened, and I talk too negative about it, but it was something that was missing. Something wasn't quite right, and it was sitting down with the team afterwards, sitting down with Paul Howarth and just having a chat through it. And it was like, he said, are you enjoying this? And it's like, to be honest with you, no, I'm not. I don't feel as though I'm contributing enough. So he's like, well, you know, what do you want to do? And it's like, is literally like, go and have a think about it, and, you know, and then decide what it is you want to do. And it was just, I don't know, it was something was missing, but it wasn't, I didn't feel like I could help enough to actually get it back on the right track, if that makes sense. And I think it's pretty big, it's a pretty big call to, you know, when your dream is to compete at the top level, to go, rightio, you know, I don't think I can help enough to actually achieve you know, what it is that we should be achieving. So that's why I made that decision. So
yeah, and Chris said to me in a pod that I did with him last year that during that period he was thinking about the car too much during the stages rather than listening to the notes probably. So I mean, yeah, there was an issue there with the car that that obviously was difficult for you to get around as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when the same thing, even in testing, you know, there was a couple of mistakes made in testing, exactly like that. Chris is thinking about the car and not actually focusing on what he's doing. And it's like, yeah, so that was, yeah, there was a couple of crashes in testing exactly the same. So, yeah, he's right. Like, that's exactly what was happening.
And you jumped back with him, what, 4 years later in 2012, yeah, I think it was, when you drove the Mini. So clearly the partnership still worked okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like, you know, it was, you know, we were teammates in Asia Pacific Championship in the Skoda, and you know, I was with Gaurav, and he, you know, and him and Stefan were teammates. There was never any animosity there. It was just I didn't know how to help him to get back on the right track, and I didn't feel as though I could add value to that relationship. So, but then to get the opportunity to go with him again in the Mini was really cool. Like, it was actually, yeah, had great fun.
Yeah. You mentioned Gaurav Gill there, and you've been with him on and off now for probably 14 years since 2009. Was it difficult to get used to foreign drivers? I guess Gaurav being one of the first that you went with, and you'd been with Japanese drivers before, but was an Indian driver difficult or more difficult to get used to in terms of culture and other things?
It was an interesting opportunity because, you know, I was asked by the team to go in and to co-drive for him and come and try and help. So it was actually, it was easier for me. It's not like I don't know if it sounds a little bit silly, but it was because the team were the ones asking me to come and help. It wasn't him asking. So I'm sure in that first event, I'm sure he was like, who's this dickhead? Sorry, I probably can't swear, but who's this guy telling me what to do? And then he's like, oh, actually, the respect was there, and he quickly realized that I was actually trying to help. So it probably took a little while, but he knows, he doesn't love sometimes when I say stuff, but he knows that I'm only trying to help and that, right. Yeah, we have a great relationship. So yeah, it's one thing that I suppose we've seen him go from, he wasn't exactly well liked in the team when I first got there. That's for sure. He could drive, but he he was sort of probably a little bit arrogant because he'd come from India and he was the best driver by a million miles. And he turned up and was like, right, well, you know, this is the way it works in India. You guys are all the mechanics. You just work on my car. And it's like, no, that's not the way it works, mate. It's like, I think, you know, it's so much of a team sport from the guys working on the car to the people in the car. It is so much of a team sport that I think a lot of people miss. So, and I think, you know, he over the years, he definitely realized that and realized the value in everybody's contribution.
And clearly he's improved incredibly as a driver throughout that period as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, without a doubt, his car control is amazing. His ability to critique what he's doing as well, not publicly, but, you know, with me, he's so respectful and so he's always trying to do things better. So his speed is, if he did enough rallies and in the right cars, I don't believe him driving some of the cars he drives in India are probably not ideal. But if he did enough rallies and enough proper cars, he could have been something. I'm sure he could have been, you know, WRC2, you know, winning pace for sure. So
how difficult is it for you as a co-driver to rate drivers? I mean, you've been with Chris in World Rally Cars, Gaurav in APRC stuff. You've been with Toshi Arai and lots of other guys. How do you rate those guys? I mean, is it possible to rate them individually?
I think they have different characteristics. I think, you know, I don't think it's one of those things. I never wanted to say any one person's better than the next. There's probably there's things that they do better. I mean, Chris in the fast is, you know, amazingly committed. You know, Gaurav, honestly, I'd probably rate him as a more overall package. But, you know, then, you know, the likes of Dean. Dean's probably the most technically correct driver I've ever sat next to. But so there's bits of each one. And if you took to mold them all together, you could make the perfect rally driver. But
what about Nathan Quinn, who you sat beside at Rally Australia in the Mini World Rally car in 2013?
That was probably my most surprising rally I've ever done in my career, and it was probably one of my favourite rallies. Okay. I'd had no real expectation, you know, turning up to the event. I knew Nathan was pretty quick. I knew his dad a bit through the relationship with High and I back in the day, but never had any real expectation. You know, the Mini was an okay car. We're on D-Max. It was like, right, you know, this will be interesting. I was blown away that whole week by, I don't know, just everything that Nathan did. You know, with it, once again, you know, the team were really good. Motorsport Italia, the engineer was like Chris's old engineer, ProDraft. So yep. There was a relationship there. I'd worked with Motorsport Italia before. The relationship was good there. I don't know. It was a great week. And Nathan just listened and learned and took it all in, and he did it like very quickly and very, say, easily, but he adapted to the things that were thrown at him like so well. It was pretty, I can't speak highly enough how good a job he did.
Yeah. Were you able to impart some knowledge, maybe some setup stuff from when you competed in the Mini with Chris?
Yeah, it's more a little bit of technique stuff. Just it's more just a few little things that he needed to probably try and do to get the most out of the car. But yeah, he did it so quickly. He adapted to it so quickly, and it just to be, you know, ways to be more efficient that, you know, you can with that car, and you can do with any car. And he was awesome.
In 2016 through to 2018, you sat beside Hiroki Arai in the Toyota Junior Driver Development Program, the son of Toshi. I mean, it must have been quite strange to sit beside the son of the gun.
Yeah, it was. It was very interesting. It was an amazing program. I'd done a couple of rallies with him in the Austrian Championship prior to that, like when he was his first overseas rally. Toshi's like, right, come and help him. And you know, it was an interesting start. It was we went testing on a wet tarmac road in Austria, and it's like we were not on the right tires, and it was like we went up the road and it was like, right, Hiroki, just take it a little bit easier. It's getting wetter. It's like just the run back was downhill.
Yep.
So didn't quite heed that warning, and we ended up inside in the trees, upside down. We're basically wedged between two trees, and I have a photo on my phone that there's literally Dad with his arms folded, looking very grumpy, and Hiroki looking at his damaged car. When you look back now, it's quite funny, but at the time, it wasn't the best start. So we then proceeded to do the rally in the slowest rally car I've ever been in my entire life, which was a diesel Impreza. So
good fun. I think that program was in, correct me if I'm wrong, basically R5 Fiestas. That was right.
Yeah. So once the Toyota started, the start of the program was R5 Fiestas, and then an R2 Fiesta. So the R2 was used for tarmac stuff for training, like Italian Championship, whatever else we did. And then the R5 car was mainly used Finland. And then we did some rallies in Portugal and a few other places like that. So it was an amazing program, all about, you know, teaching them pace notes and getting them up to speed and some really cool people involved running the program. It was the budget for the program was amazing because, you know, they'd go out, damage cars, and or we'd damage cars. And then there'd be, you know, a new car or a spare car or whatever the case may be. So that's where obviously Taka came from. He's obviously driving for Toyota now, so he was the teammate and progressed over a three-year period.
Was there much difference? Obviously we've seen the stage times, but much difference between Takamoto Katsuda and Hiroki Arai in terms of speed on the stages?
No, I think in the first 2 years, Hiroki was actually faster. He had more experience on gravel, and so he was quicker. And then Taka was sort of catching up. He was pretty good on tarmac. He'd come from a Formula 3 racing background. So, and Taka was, he got better and better and better. He put one hell of a lot of work into pace notes and training and getting better. So, and I think, you know, that was probably Hiroki's downfall is that, you know, not being too critical, but Taka was probably putting in more effort than Hiroki was in terms of Hiroki naturally has an amazing talent. Yeah. He is really, really quick. But he didn't quite refine his skill as much as Taka did. Taka kept improving and kept getting better, and Hiroki sort of when he started to get challenged, felt threatened. So probably lost a bit of confidence.
Was there a cut and dry reason given why that Taka got the drive and Hiroki didn't?
It was more based on results and speed, and Hiroki had made some, you know, a few more mistakes, and the back half of, and I think it was, and I don't know this for a fact, but I think a lot of it was probably down to the fact of how they handled pressure. You know, Taka was probably on the up and Hiroki had probably leveled out or not handled the pressure that well, you know, damaged some car. He was damaging more cars as Taka actually got quicker. So, yeah, Phil, I just think he lost what he was doing naturally and started to feel a bit more pressured, I think.
Mm. As we know, Taka's still competing in a full WRC program with Toyota. Do you ever sit there and think, geez, that could be me?
No, to be honest with you, no. I loved my time in the sport and I would never change any of it, but at some point I suppose it was time to grow up and stop traveling and to do something different, and that's where Powerplay came from. So that's my new, probably pretty competitive, and that's my new competitive side is to make Powerplay everything it possibly can be.
Yeah, now let's chat about Powerplay because, I mean, obviously that's your electric go-kart business that you're involved with Dean Herridge. And as you say, it's starting to go gangbusters, which is great. Tell us a bit about it.
Trying to decide, it's like, what am I actually going to do if I actually need to grow up and stop traveling? What am I going to do? It's like, so sort of started formulating some ideas about, you know, because it's a rallying's a passion. It's like, you know, it's what I love. And it's like, you know, how can I share some of that, you know, business sense with an average person? Like, yeah. It's like to let them experience what we're talking about. So we started looking at all sorts of ways to actually do that. And then sort of came across electric go-karting and the way it was done and not being disrespectful to anybody else in the industry, but realized how it wasn't done that great. You always, essentially you go to these centers and you're told not to do something. It's like,
yeah,
how about if we actually try and teach the people on how to do it? So we literally encourage people to slide the go-karts and we've made the tracks quite slippery. So it feels like you're actually, you know, kind of like you're on gravel. So you actually slide the cart into the corner and drive, you know, drive straight out of the corner. So it's, we've done things quite different, but it seems to have resonated with people. So we've pretty much been full every single weekend since we've opened almost 3 years ago. We now have two centres and we have plans for a lot more.
And I'd imagine initially it would have been a very expensive thing for you guys to set up, given purchasing the cars from overseas and setting up the facility.
Yeah, we've got a two-level track here. So we bought a track from Italy. We went over there and met them and you know, showed them all our plans. And most people turned around and said it'd never work. And it's like, we've done things quite different. But, yeah, it was certainly an expensive proposition initially. But I suppose we did. I spent probably two full years researching everything. So I don't know. I was kind of confident, kind of.
and plans to move it interstate, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got some, you know, we've obviously got, like I said, two in Perth, but there are plans now to take it around Australia. So just trying to find locations at the moment and put the funding in place and get all that right. So you know, do all the groundwork first and then try and take it around Australia.
Yeah, and they're obviously indoor centres. Is there the possibility to go on to gravel surfaces as well, or do the carts need to be inside on flat tracks?
It's just it'd be really horrible now and say you should probably come here on a Saturday morning and watch the way that people drive, and then they realise that that's probably not a great suggestion. It's yeah, like okay. They struggle. Well, it sounds really mean, but it's, you know, if you sort of take the, you know, just the average punter off the street, like it's a difficult enough experience as it is. Like you don't want to make it too much more difficult, if that makes sense.
I got it.
So yeah, it is. We have, you know, racing people here all the time, and you know, even good go-karters. Yeah, they don't struggle with it, but it's like it is, technique-wise, it's actually, I wouldn't say it's hard, but it's quite hard to master, shall I say.
And I'd imagine from an owner's point of view, it's a much nicer setting where you haven't got all those exhaust fumes and all that sort of stuff going on, and it must
be. Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's the thing is, you know, we've traditionally go-kart centres have been, you know, dark and dingy, and ours is, you know, ours is colourful and bright, and it's designed to appeal to everybody. It's just designed to, you know, we literally sell fun. So we're all about, you know, we're all about like a racing experience, but done in a fun Mario Kart style way that you know, it's a funny thing. It's about the experience after you've finished racing, which is going to sound really funny, but it's like it's that. We've had staff comment that, you know, they'll work together and don't really know the person that well, but then they'll race together, and then once they've raced together and they've competed, because there's a big, you know, there's a big scoreboard right front and center of the track, so it's all about your lap time. Once they finish racing, they're like, we feel like we're, you know, feel like they're friends and they've bonded together. So it's a really because what we tried to create was that feeling of team,
yes,
you know, that we get to experience, you know, rallying. Yeah, it's quite unique, the experience.
Mm. And is the damage repairs and stuff less than it would be on normal go-karts or traditional go-karts, I guess I should say?
We literally have treated it like rallying, like we're running a rally car almost. We have maintenance schedules, and we have we've made like, you know, a life for every single part. So we don't have that many carts here. We only have 8 carts on the track at any one time, and we literally have 1 spare cart. Most centres that probably have double that with the size of the building that we have it in. We don't have the room to have spare carts, so we literally maintain our carts to the highest possible standard. The ones in Joondalup have done something like 65,000 kilometres each.
Have they really?
And the ones in Bibra Lake are only, you know, new in November last year. And if you drove one versus the other, you wouldn't be able to tell. So because that's just because they've been maintained to the, you know, to the highest possible standard. So.
Oh, fantastic. I look forward to seeing it come across onto the East Coast.
Yeah, become an experience about it.
Absolutely, yeah. Let's lock it in. Getting back onto the rally stuff, and just recently before I let you go, I mean, you jumped in with Scott Petter 2 or 3 weeks ago for the Gippsland Rally. That must have been a wonderful experience again.
Yeah, like, look, it wasn't something that I'd planned to do. It was one of those things. I was asked whether I'd be keen, and I was like, I don't have enough time to, you know, time with work and anything. One thing led to another, and it was like, right, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And honestly, it makes you fall in love with the sport all over again. It was like, I know we didn't do a lot, but it was, yeah, you remember all the reasons why you do love it, that's for sure.
Well, you've obviously proved that you both still got it, because you're 7.7s quicker than anybody on the first stage, even with the stall. So it's quite remarkable.
Yeah, it goes okay. I'd hate to see him when he actually, you know, there was still a little bit of rust in there, and there was lots of nerves, that's for sure. So there was plenty of opportunity to go quicker, and you know, it was, you know, Scott in the fast stuff is pretty impressive. It's you know, he just, his commitment to the notes and all the rest of it, it's like, mate, I haven't done this for 5 years, really. It's like, yeah, it was very cool. So, you know, but, you know, we made probably a silly mistake through not being match fit on the next stage. But, yeah, if somebody convinced him to come back, I think he'd certainly put the cat amongst the pigeons, that's for sure.
Well, I was actually chatting to him this morning, and he reckons that you're pretty keen to keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I am. It's like, it's, you know, I didn't want to do the rally. I was like, I didn't want to do it because I didn't have the time with work, and feel as though it was the right thing to take the focus off it. But literally going and doing it, I don't know. It was probably 3K into the first stage. It was like, this is cool. This is really cool. And it's just it's really hard to describe, but it's, you come back to work refreshed and feel like I've been on a holiday for a week. It's like, it was very cool.
As you've got older, Glenn, I mean, obviously the speeds are still high. Have you got to that stage where you think about the risks and the dangers of competing? Clearly the cars are a lot safer and the equipment's better these days.
I think, you know, probably more mature, and you probably think about the risks of certain corners in different ways, or I don't think you're just more educated about trying to make things as efficient as possible, and not, you take risks in the areas you take, if you're worried about the speed, then you probably shouldn't be doing it. I don't think I'd go with too many people at the speed that Scott was driving, but I completely and utterly, you know when you sit with somebody whether they've got it or they haven't got it. And, you know, I think, you know, within the first few corners of, you know, it's probably a silly thing to say, but, you know, he's been a past Australian champion, but within the first few corners of testing, it's like, right, I'll just sit here and do my job. It's like, he's completely and utterly got everything under control.
Yeah, yeah. And just to finish off, looking back over your career, do you have a favourite memory and maybe a least favourite memory from all the events you've done?
I think Rally Australia with Nathan stands out as the most surprising event that I ever did. It's probably a bit like Drivers. I don't want to say there's a favourite memory anywhere, but it was, you know, Rally Australia with him was surprising, and that week was one of the most fun weeks probably I've actually had. I mean, you know, even going back with Scott, you know, in Gippsland, that was a great experience, great people, and that was a great experience. Yeah, Rally Australia, you know, whilst they were Rally Australia, sorry, in Perth with Chris, whilst they were the couple of rallies there were ones that we probably got away, but they were pretty cool memories, you know, to be competing in your home rally, something you've grown up with, and to be actually leading on pace, that was pretty cool. So,
yeah, what about maybe the worst memory, whether it be an accident or something that happened in the sport when you're involved?
Probably the worst
the worst memory was probably would be Lee and I planning, Lee Hines and I planning to go to the UK, going all that way, saving all our money, planning everything, and literally going to this event. And it was on the promenade of Bournemouth, the first round of the national championship. And we crashed into a bridge parapet within about 400 metres of the first stage. So that was probably something in the gearbox locked up and basically understeered straight to this bridge. And it's like, really? We've come all this way for this? So that was probably a low point. Yeah, it was probably the accident with Emma in New Zealand. Wasn't great because she obviously got knocked out in the accident and stuff like that. So that wasn't...
Which event was that in?
Rally Whangarei was in, I'm trying to think now, 2006, I think it was. So, doing amazingly well and just a pace note wasn't quite right and she committed over the crest and it was a dodgy corner and we rolled into a paddock. And when I say we rolled into a paddock, it was like one hell of a long way down. Wasn't a whole lot left of the car and her seat mount broke in the accident and she hit her head on the roll cage and knocked herself out and that wasn't cool coming to rest, with your partner when she's knocked out in a rally car and it's like I remember, climbing out of the car and it was one hell of a long way to the road.
Yeah.
We were just lucky that Richard Mason, who we'd passed in the stages, he had a problem. He saw the marks and so he stopped. So so very lucky that he stopped and went and got help. And but literally, even trying to communicate to him on the road, it was like literally trying to yell and he could just barely hear what was that's how far off the road we were. So that wasn't a cool experience, that's for sure.
Just shows the highs and lows of the sport, literally, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Glenn, it's been fantastic to catch up and to relive some of the memories of your extraordinary career. Hopefully it's not finished yet and that we can see you back in that Skoda with Scotty Petter. Thanks for the chat.
Thank you very much, Peter. I much appreciate it, mate.